Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, which is in the Black Belt, and listen to the live stream there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media is there also, which is home base. Full of interesting articles, a podcast of the daily programs on Time for an Awakening that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. We might have some updates coming to timeforawakening.com. It would be more user-friendly changes coming to the page in the near future, so just keep abreast. I'll always keep you, give you a heads up on what's going on with timeforawakening.com. Tonight, we're in open forum this evening again. Open forum this evening on timeforawakening.com. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. And again, I'm missing Brother Richard, my co-host. Give you a little bit more detail after we come back from break. But again, open forum on Time for Awakening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And usually on this segment of the program, I introduce my co-host, Brother Richard. Brother Richard is, again, not with us today. Brother Richard's mom is still fighting. Last week, they sent her home from hospice. Usually at hospice is an end-of-life type of thing for, you know, for some of our listening audience that has relatives or friends that had been in hospice or aware of it. That's where they kind of bring you in to kind of help you make your transition, so to speak. But Brother Richard's mother wanted to be home. In her home. So they sent her home from hospice last week and didn't give her that much time. They gave her a matter of a day or two. Well, it's been a week and Brother Richard's mother is still here fighting. They're still giving her a limited time. Thoughts and prayers go out to Brother Richard, and I extended to him some of the thoughts and prayers of our listening audience. To talk with him a little earlier this morning and in the afternoon to see how things were going. No change, but our thoughts and prayers go out to Brother Richard and his family during this time of preparing for their mother's transition. She's a fighter. That's black women for you. That's the history of our people since we've been in this country. We don't give up that easy. We're fighters. And his mother's hanging on. She she didn't want to transition in the hospice or in the hospital. She wanted to come home. So Brother Richard and his sisters and brothers brought her home to a home. And he's with her. He's with her there now. So again, our thoughts and prayers go out to Brother Richard during this time for his family. But again, like last week, we can always depend on some of the time for Awakening Family. Brother Ralph is again with us this evening to kind of share with us in conversation. Brother Ralph.
Hey, good evening, Book. How are we doing?
How are you, sir?
All right, fine.
Brother Ralph, some things going on here. It's been hectic for me the past, I guess, about a month until I kind of get settled in one. And settled into things, so I'm not used to time for awakening in this fashion, where we're kind of missing. For about a period of 9 years, we never missed a day, and some of the Fridays programs have been missed. But I apologize again to the listening audience, because we're going to be back and moving in unison within the next week or two. That you know, once I get kind of situated. In my surroundings, a lot of interesting things going on. It's an article I want to share with the listening audience that I didn't get a chance to do last week. I'll do it momentarily. We see that the president of this country is going to pick his choice for the Supreme Court within the next day. I think it's supposed to be announced tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Some of his counterparts in the Senate and the Congress are voicing that they want somebody that's more favorable to not overturning that Roe versus Wade abortion. That's something I want to throw out to the listening audience tonight. I know the listening audience of Time for Awakening is very astute, but some of our people get caught up in that abortion debate, and especially some of our women that have been siding with these Caucasian women about this debate on abortion. And I kind of want to throw that out there in conversation this evening in reference to that abortion debate and how we fall into that. Brother Ralph wanted to raise some things, because we had been talking about it on Time for an Awakening about ethics. I wanted to raise that topic again of ethics and point to this code of ethics that they use for all the armed forces in this country, and read it and just look at it and analyze it compared to our people in our situation. Before I go to that, Ralph, let me read this article that was written in the Final Call, July 3rd edition of Final Call. And it's about the Charleston, South Carolina's resolution apologizing for the slave trade. Columbia, South Carolina, after rigorous debate and diverse input, the City Council of South Carolina of Charleston, South Carolina, voted to apologize to the descendants of slavery and denounce the horrors of the dehumanization of that institution. Resolution 26, apologizing for the enslavement and racial segregation of African Americans, won a 7-5 vote on June 19th. Despite June 19th, dispute about the resolution among council members was largely around whether the document would amount to more than a symbolic action. Councilman Keith Waring, who is black, rejected the apology resolution, saying economic disparities widely affect the recipients of the apology. Without economic empowerment as a descendant of slaves, I cannot support this resolution, Waring said. He asked whether the council's accountability would come after the fact and assure tangible action for black ill affected by the legacy of slavery and vestiges of Jim Crow laws still on Charleston's books. The council held the session inside the sprawling white Charleston City Hall, a building constructed by slaves that served as a center of American historic crimes against humanity. Another iconic aspect of the vote was it took place on Juneteenth, which was celebrated as the marking of the end of slavery in parts of Texas. The port city of Charleston was a major hub for slave ships carrying cargo of black bodies to be sold on auction blocks, like at Charleston's famous Old Slave Mart, which is now a museum. The resolution touts recognizing, denouncing, and apologizing on behalf of the city of Charleston for the city's role in regulating, supporting, and fostering slavery, and the resolution and the resulting atrocities inflicted by the institution of slavery. There was mixed reaction among the people present in the chamber, where the bust of famous slaveholders like George Washington decorated the walls. Everyday folk and prominent residents attended the hearing to witness the vote. I've always felt if we get this part right, we could hold the key to healing this nation, Charleston resident Toby Smith said during the meeting. She appealed to the council to pass the resolution and show America something positive. Several people carefully pointed out the apology is from the city, not individuals. The resolution under consideration is an apology for the city of Charleston. It's not an apology by individuals, said Alex Sanders, a former chief justice who supported the measure. None of us around today own slaves, nor did many of our families of slaves own slaves. We all enjoy the benefits every day of what enslaved people were compelled to produce, Judge Sanders argued. Other residents supported the apology, but called for justice throughout and reparations with the acknowledgement of wrongdoing. Apologies and regrets is not significant to heal wounds, said Robert King David Ross, an artist with the South Carolina Arts Commission. That's why we need reparations for African Americans in Charleston and other parts of South Carolina. Mr. Ross called the slave trade a bleeding wound responsible for one of the cruelest mass deportations of people that drained Africa of its life's blood while contributing to the economic and commercial expansion of Charleston. Kim Clay said this is a long time coming. She lamented that the crowd about their uncomfortable demeanor, particularly when reparations was raised. It's about accepting and dealing with the raw truth of the history and what had happened to blacks in this city. The Nation of Islam's Charleston's representatives, DeAndre Muhammad, said, "Black folks are still suffering," says Mr. Muhammad, "in the downtown district where the vote was what had happened. Blacks are being forced out through gentrification, while people are being wooed with an apology. Blacks are being priced out of living in this city of their former enslavement. White folks have this thing about them. If they just say that they apologize, then it's okay with black people," said a spokesman for black people, Mr. Muhammad added. "We need to stop being deceived. Whites profited from slavery and still profit today through robust tourism and historical sites tied to slavery are still reaping profits," he says. Mr. Muhammad observes that blacks built Charleston with their blood, sweat, and lives. "We don't need any more conversation. We need real compensation," he said. Longtime activist Leonard Riley of the Internal Longshoremen Association 1422 agreed that the apology was not enough. "I don't see the net improvement as it impacts the people that struggled today," says Mr. Riley of the resolution. he doesn't expect a policy apology to change much in the way of race relations in Charleston. It's a feel-good moment, and only for the moment. Apologies is one thing, but what's more important is how I live after the apology, says Mr. Riley. This councilman, Keith Waring, that voted against it and stated why, I reached out to him to be on the program. I've yet to receive his response because I just did it recently. So he might respond, and I hope to have him on in the upcoming program to talk about his vote against it, although he stated why, and just to give our listening audience a flavor of what's going on in Charleston, especially behind this. Ralph, your comments in reference to this resolution here, the Resolution 26, with Charleston apologizing for slavery, but you hear some of the comments of some of our people down there in reference to it.
I mean, what is, it's nothing but wasted conversation, if you ask me. I mean, really, I hear our people talking about reparations, we apologize. You know, it's the same old rhetoric, year after year after year, while they continue doing the things they do. You know, I really just see it as, I don't know. I don't know what our people are looking for. You know, you hear that they talk about improved race relations. I guess after being on this planet for almost 60 years, why are you looking for that? I mean, I hate to sound blunt like that, but it's a bunch of rhetoric, you know, in my opinion. Now, as far as the longshoremen that you talked about, you need to be worried about something else, because those port authorities, man, are hiring people from Poland and Russia and other places now. And you don't see, like, I know a lot of the older gentlemen when we were growing up, they were making good money, and they called it the waterfront. Mm-hmm. They were actually longshoremen.
Mm-hmm.
And they were making good money, providing money for their families. You don't see that anymore.
Oh, so I know.
I don't, you know, I just don't know what, you know, I don't, and to be honest with you, I don't look for nothing from this government, man. I really don't. You know, they talk about Trump's Supreme Court nominees. What is it going to change? He might as well go on and put David Duke on there. You know, I mean, what is it going to change? And I hope the caller from Louisiana calls in, Mr. Pugh, or whatever his name is, because I want to ask him, what is it going to change?
Well,
I don't understand it.
Well, you know, this is just, and among many examples of just how Europeans have dealt with our people, especially since we've been here. One of the people that were at the Charleston City Hall where this was done at made comments in reference to, and if I can find his comments again, he talked about how Europeans have always dealt with our people in this fashion, with symbolic gestures, but no exactly. Teeth behind it. And that just goes to the assertion that we made last week about Europeans not really changing or wanting to change, or I don't think they have the capability to change. It's always an image of what they want to project, but it's no real teeth behind what they're stating. It's no explanation needed to be given in reference to the atrocities of the enslavement that was inflicted on our people. I mean, it wasn't a thing like Jews tried to use about being in concentration camps, which might have lasted a period of 3 to 5 years, maybe a little bit longer. This period of our enslavement and brutalization lasted over 250 years, many generations of this type of stuff. And along with the enslavement, the indoctrination that took place behind it did mental damage to our people. So it's no debate. And even the damage that is done and continues to do to our people today. So if Europeans wanted to even attempt to even correct these measures, they could do it with more than just symbolic gestures, which means absolutely nothing. And it is kind of funny that that you mentioned that, Ralph, because I was reading an article the other day. Now, it's an old article. The article is a year old, and it was written by, I just want to share it with the listening audience. We got a couple callers on hold, and before we go to the caller, let me read this article, and I want to get to the part that we discussed before about ethics. I think it's important. But let me share some of this so we can get the full scope of not only what we're dealing with, but what our representatives that sit in these offices have seen, have been told that they're going to go along with, and they don't say nothing about it. Now, let me read some of this. This was written by this guy named Philip Girardi. He was a former CIA officer and executive director of the Council for National Interests. So it wasn't just a layman guy. This guy was involved in hierarchy in this government. He wrote an article in this publication called The American Conservative, and it's called The True Cost of Israel. Now, when I'm reading this, keep in mind that this money comes out of your pocket and goes towards someone else. And I want you to pay close attention to the amounts of money, because this government think that black folks are stupid. And most white folks think that black folks are less intelligent than they are. That's a reality. That's not a bigoted statement or whatever. That's a reality. Now, you know, the argument with some folks is, you know, the cost of reparations will be this, that, and the other. The country can't afford it. You heard all kind of stuff in reference, and some of them don't even want to talk about it. But let me share with you this article that this guy, Philip Girardi, had published in this American Conservative publication. I'm going to share with you some of the article. It says, hold on a second. Let me get it straight here.
Elliot, go ahead. Let me tell you something. While you're getting that article together, even in New York, in Brooklyn, they said that this is a proven fact. The people getting a large amount of what you call it, Section 8 housing, food stamps, and other things, is the Hasidic community in Brooklyn. Now, that article, they know for a fact that those landlords who are business owners in the Hasidic community. So I think I know the article you're going to talk about. I'm talking about right here at home, mm-hmm. how your tax dollars are being spent. The Hasidic community is the big, they're the biggest, and I hope Jay calls in and backs me up on this. Section 8 housing. Usually when people hear about Section 8 housing, they're thinking about black folk. Nah, look at Brooklyn, New York. The Hasidic community. Food stamps. The Hasidic community. DPL welfare. That's a Hasidic community. Most of the times when you're riding through Brooklyn or going past Sterner Studios or whatever, I see all those cats walking to work with briefcases in their hat, in their hands, head of banking organizations. So I know where you're going, but that's the perfect example we need to look at right there, man. Proven fact, they know it. Nobody been arrested. Nobody's been thrown in prison. So go ahead, talk about that article you're about to talk about. That's a smack in the face to all of us right there.
Yeah, well, let me. I'm gonna share with you some of the article, and then we'll get back to it, and then I'll bring some of these callers in. Now, the article that's written by this gentleman, Philip Girardi, it's called "The True Cost of Israel." It says the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, concluded its annual conference late last month, triggering the usual debate in various alternative media outlets. Why does U.S. taxpayer money go to to a small and not particularly useful client state that has a vibrant European-level economy and is already a regional military colossus. In truth, American aid to Israel is something like a pot of gold that keeps on giving. Both sides in the discussion would probably agree that the domestic Israel lobby has been instrumental in sustaining, hold on one second. Okay. Yeah, both sides in the discussion would probably agree that the domestic Israel lobby have been instrumental in sustaining a high level of aid, though they would undoubtedly disagree on whether that is good or bad thing. The operation of the lobby, generally regarded as the most powerful voice on foreign policy in Washington, led Professors Stephen Walt and John Mershmeyer to ask, why has the U.S. been willing to set aside its own security in order to advance the interests of another state? Explanation can account for a remarkable level of material and diplomatic support for the U.S. providers. They observe that other special interest groups have managed to skew foreign policy, but no lobby has managed to divert it as far of what the national interest would suggest, while simultaneously convincing Americans that U.S. interests and those of another country, in this case Israel, are essentially identical. Since the foundation of the State of Israel in 1948, it has been the largest cumulative recipient of U.S. foreign assistance since World War II. According to the Congressional Research Service, the United States have provided Israel with $233.7 billion in adjustment for inflation aid between 1948 and the end of 2012. According to Haaretz, current discussion centered on the Obama administration's memo of understanding with Israel that promised $38 billion in military assistance over the next 10 years. A considerable sum, but nevertheless a total that is far less than is actually received annually from the United States Treasury and from other American sources. Now, let me continue a little bit, but just keep in mind that this article states that the U.S. has provided Israel with $233.7 billion, billion dollars in adjusted for inflation aid, which means it has increased between 1948 and 2012. $233 billion of taxpayer money. And then it talks about other added ancillary things, like I just stated, what he states the Obama administration gave in assistance. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, speaking in most recent legislative discussions over Israel aid, stated that $38 billion should be regarded as a floor and that Congress should approve additional funds for Israel's defense as needed. It has, in fact, done so. Its most recent meeting, AIPAC announced the latest windfall from America, applauding the U.S. House of Representatives for significantly bolstering its support for Israel's missile defense cooperation in the FY 2017 of defense appropriation bill. The House appropriated $600.7 million for U.S. Israel defense programs, and there's a long history of such special funding for Israel-connected projects. The Iron Dome missile defense system, which was largely funded by the United States to the tune of over $1 billion. In the 80s, the Israel Lava Jet Fighter Development Program was funded by Washington, costing over $2 billion to taxpayers before it was terminated over technical and other problems. As a part of the $500.45 billion in Pentagon funding for various Israeli weapons projects in 2002. Admittedly unreliable former Congressman James Trificant once claimed that Israel gets $15 billion per year from American taxpayers. Indeed, how Israel gets money from the United States is actually quite complex and not very transparent to the American public, going well beyond the check for $3.8 billion handed over at the beginning of every fiscal year on October 1st. Even that check, uniquely given to aid recipients, Israel has one lump sum on the first day of the year. It is manipulated to produce extra revenue. It is normally immediately redeposited with U.S. Treasury, which then, because of its operating on a deficit, borrows from the money to pay interest on its Israeli drawdown. The interest down payments cost the American taxpayer an estimated $100 million per year. Israel has been adept at using loan guarantees to ensure that they may have contributed to the downfall of George W. Bush. In reality, the loans totaling $42 billion were never repaid, meaning the United States Treasury picks up the tab on principal and interest and a form of additional assistance. The Bush-era loans accounted for $10 billion. Now, I'm not going to keep reading all these figures, but that just gives you an idea of the ungodly sums of money that Israel gets from the United States, hundreds of billions of dollars, and they claim that they can't afford to give black folks anything beside, Ralph? Job program just slipped right out of my mind. Affirmative action, which amounted to basically nothing. Now, here's another thing to take into account, because I want to talk about this ethics thing, Ralph. Here's another thing that black representatives who gave their allegiance to Israel support.
To Israel.
Yeah, and taxpayers' dollars support it. Now, Jews, and I'm talking about young Jewish folks in this country, everyone that you see if they wanted to, do you know that they can get a free 10-day trip to Israel if they're young Jewish adults between the ages of 18 to 32? Free. On taxpayers' dollars, on your dollars. They get to go to Israel and experience what they consider their culture. You know, a lot of that stuff is stolen culture and appropriated culture. That's another story. But they get to experience their culture for 10 days. A free trip on a taxpayer's dollar. Now, it's AIPAC that has lobbied for monies from different sources. If you look at it, it don't say it comes from U.S. taxpayer dollars. But if you do a little looking behind the scenes of all of these groups, these lobby groups, it basically comes from out of your pocket to attribute to young Jewish kids, the average ones, going to Israel if they choose to, on your dime. Now, I've talked to plenty of people that have been on this program up until last week even, Brother Donnie, that said when he went to the continent, it changed his life. Going around the countryside, talking to our people, experiencing the land, and seeing it firsthand for himself. Everyone that I've talked to, even historians that have been on this program, talk about their visits to the continents have changed their life. Can you imagine if our people can be able to go to the land of their nativity and their ancestors' nativity and spend some time there, how it might change their life? Jews get to do it, 18 to 32, on your dime. On your taxpayers' money. Ungodly sums.
Who runs this country, man?
Ungodly sums that have been raised over the years.
Well, just name the people that run the country.
I'm just using that as an example. I mean, we hear all these excuses why things can't be done when it's being done all the time for other people. Let me
and
go
that,
to
that part with South Williamsburg I was talking about. Everybody know it's massive fraud going on there, but nobody's getting locked up. Nobody's getting their property taken from them or anything. Yet they're the Section 8 housing, subsidized. I mean, that's all taxpayer money. But yet our people were, Reagan's campaign slogan, the welfare queen, was a black woman. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? So, we got to see past all that. That's why I barely watch any kind of news or anything like that, man. I can't, because it's nothing but massive programming. And it's a shame that a lot of our people have bought into the program, so. I'm gonna leave it at that.
Let me pull down the call here. Let's go to 225. 225.
Yes. Yes. One of the things that I heard was there was a reference. There was a hope that the Louisiana caller would call in. So I'm here. So I don't know what what you'd like me to respond to.
I would like to finish up our conversation last week because you were trying to tell me about the laws and, you actually believe in the laws that's on the books. And I basically said to you last week, we've been citizens since 1866 and we were supposed to get dual equals treatment under that law. And I then named you about Jim Crow. I talked about the lynchings, which is nothing more than murder all over the South. And you never really gave me an answer about, are those laws enforced or are those laws useless? And that's what we're just talking about here again. These people, they create laws that don't mean a thing, but yet we believe in them more than they do. So I just wanted to get your response on that.
Right. Actually, I think that's an excellent question, and I think this revisiting all this is crucially important. Elliot was just talking about some of the benefits that are available to Jewish Americans that are not available to us. And I would ask the rhetorical question. I would say, well, are you interested in us achieving those benefits? Because if the answer is yes, then you'll appreciate the whole framework that I'm coming from. So the one thing that I want to say is that you're correct that that there's hypocrisy that that the laws don't apply to black people. But if you want to change that, excuse me.
I'll say thank you.
Right. But if you want to change that, it requires some other analysis. Now, one of the points that Elliot made last week was that he said, he asked me point blank to demonstrate when white people were different. And I drew a blank. And if I could, I think that's directly related to everything that we're talking about now. So, do I have permission to continue that? Let me explain what my thought process is.
Okay.
I had two conversations with Dr. John Henry Clark. And one conversation I had with him was just a few words. I was at Southern University back in the 90s, and I came to a lecture late. And as I was walking in, he said, white people don't have any conscience. And so after the lecture, I walked up to him and I said, well, Dr. Clark, you said that white people didn't have any conscience. Did you provide any evidence for that? And he said, have you ever seen their conscience? And I said, no, I've never seen it. He says, well, I haven't either, right? So his argument was that if white people had a conscience, it would be demonstrated. That is to say that if they knew better, then they would do better, right? And that's the kind of analysis that Elliot was doing when he asked me, hey, demonstrate to me, when white people have been different. And so that's kind of what I want to speak to.
Well, listen, I want you to hold your point. The only thing I would differ from your analysis of Dr. Clark's response to you, I'm not saying if they knew better, they would do better. I mean, white folks can think just like we can. They do know better. They don't want to do any better. It's not like they don't know that things are unfair, inhumane, that they have committed crimes against humanity. It's not like they're not aware of these things. They're fully aware, because when they have done it to other people, it's been historical occasions where they have done more than just symbolically give statements of that they're sorry. I just read cases of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars given to a country that they're still giving money to now. And they use it for all types of things, all types of things, even to the point of that they want to send every Jewish person from ages of 18 to 32 for a free 10-day trip to their homeland so they can immerse them in their culture. So, no, it's not, I'm not right, saying well, that they, right. well, they don't well, if they don't well, know better. But well, go ahead. Well, I'm sorry.
When I said know better, do better, I meant that more metaphorically. And in fact, one of the things that I was prepared to offer is some proof that they know better, which is exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
But all I'm saying is that you know that the kind of evidence that Dr. Clark was making was that he was making the argument that if white people knew something different, then they would do something different. That if they valued having a conscience, then they would demonstrate a conscience. I mean, that's the kind of argument he was making. And so what I want to say to you is that that standard of evidence doesn't help us in this situation. And the reason it doesn't help us in this situation is because history is always the story of the winner. And so one of the things that has happened with white people is that they've been conquered by white people. And the very white people who conquered them have essentially washed the history to make it appear that they weren't conquered, to make it appear that this is just the natural way that things are. And one of the proofs that I want to offer is that there's a professor of government. He's dead now, but he's like the cause of all these, you know, classes, civilizations, and all of this kind of, exploitation of the collapse of the Soviet Union. His name was Samuel Huntington. One of the points he made is that he says that power remains strong when it remains in the dark. But when it's exposed to sunlight, it begins to evaporate. And that's a very profound statement, especially when you recognize the difference between power and authority, that the relationship between you and your mother, I assume, is a relationship based upon authority, that you listen to her because you believe that the things that she's telling you are in your interest. On the other hand, the relationship between you and an armed robber is a relationship based on power, where you will listen to them not because you believe what they're doing is in your interest, but simply because they have, you know, this ability to do ugly things to you if you don't. So when Dr. Huntington was describing the relationships between the United States and the people in the world as based on power that has to remain in the dark, then he's saying these relationships are not based on authority. That is to say, they're not based upon the mutual interest of the people. And so as a result, there has to be dissembling and bamboozling and different things to keep people in the dark. And so that leads to the third part. One of the issues that we have today is that, you know, when this country was founded, the objective that they had was, if you look at Gerald Horn's thesis of the Counter-Revolution of 1776, Gerald Horn is the black historian at University of Houston,
mm-hmm.
Who said that the settlers in America were afraid that England was getting ready to reverse its slavery policy after a 1722 court decision. And as a result, you know, they were concerned about the end of slavery in America. And so for that reason, you know, they began the fomenting of rebellion. Well, one of the first things that happened when, you know, there was a Declaration of Independence that was created, and that was a document that basically promised equality for everyone. That is, white people, regardless of whether they had property or not, and so on. And it was sort of an inspirational document. But the actual form of the government that they had in 1776 was a confederacy based upon, you know, the Iroquois Confederacy, where, you know, you had all of these states coming together. And, me in state A, I don't have, you know, any control over you in state B and so on. It was all pretty much based on gentlemen's agreement. But one of the things that happened is that the Shays Rebellion, where you had Massachusetts farmers, for example, who had fought in the Revolutionary War, but because they were all fighting, they weren't maintaining their property, and their property was accruing taxes. And so when they returned home to their property, they were being told that, that they were in arrears. And because the United States didn't have any money, the United States couldn't pay them for the, for fighting in the war, and they couldn't get any kind of relief from the bankers and so on, you know, in their home states. And so Shay began a rebellion, to talk about how unfair it was for us to, you know, essentially win this country and then not be able to get any of the benefits. So as a result of that, as a result of Shay's rebellion, the property holders in America realized that a confederacy was not going to be enough, that what they had to have is a stronger central government, because they had to have the ability to put down white people who didn't have property, who may not like the way things were going. In fact, one of the issues that they had at the time was, in fact, Jefferson talked about how land needed to be divided into smaller portions so that people that don't have a lot of wealth can be able to accumulate land, because if they don't have land, there's no possibility of them actually, being viable. So let me just cut to the chase. So what they did is they went searching around for a constitution which would enable them to maintain their relative wealth advantage, but at the same time be able to put down, any kind of rebellions, either internally or externally. And where they found that constitution was in Rome. It was with Cicero. This Cicero was a straight gangster. In fact, if you look at Donald Trump's behavior and Cicero's behavior is 100%. Everything Trump does is directly based upon the principles of Cicero. Well, this government, this kind of triune government, where you have a president who is king-like, and you have an aristocracy, which is which is the Senate, and then you have the people, which is supposed to be the House, and the country is designed in such a way that the people themselves are suppressed, that it's very difficult for anything they do to actually manifest itself in real policy. Well, that government came from Cicero. So what I'm saying to you, and by the way, now I forget your guest name, because what's his name?
You're talking about Brother Ralph. He's kind of co-hosting with
Brother Ralph. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying to Brother Ralph is that we need to understand that there was duplicity from the beginning, that there were two conversations going on, that the wealthy in this country had no intention of this ever being a democracy. They never intended it to be fair. In fact, Madison said that the whole point of this is to basically be able to protect the opulent few from the many, right? And so what I'm saying to you is that your critique of the situation for black people, if you want that to be effective, that critique has to be expanded to incorporate not just what's happened with black people, but what has happened larger than black people to other. In fact, the whole Occupy Wall Street should tell you something, because here's a case where trillions of dollars was spent basically to prop up the very people who had destroyed the economy to the detriment of blacks, whites, and everybody else. So I don't know, that's a lot of talk,
I want to say something before I move on to.
I agree. I sort of agree with them, because they talk about, I've learned this through their institutions of higher learning, that bread, wine, and circus is there. to actually fool the masses and keep a revolt from going on. And you can almost see what Mr. Pugh is talking about. They don't give a dag all about us revolting. What they care is about that working white poor. They got to keep them full. They got to keep them full. And where the wine comes is they got that opioid. That's not a mistake, man. That's keeping those people high so they won't revolt while they're doing what they do. That was also a Roman thing that was instituted under a dictatorship. They called it bread, wine, and circus. Keep them entertained, keep them high, and keep them full, and you don't have nothing to worry about. And that's exactly what is going on right now. It's just that not too many of us see it. And matter of fact, they will vote Trump in again because they don't see it. And, you know, so I sort of agree with you, Mr. Pugh. I understand what you're saying. But like what Elliot said, this program deals directly with our people and what's our place here. We, you know, I think everybody has to hold their own accountability and responsibility. We got to recognize what it is. We got to stop having bleeding hearts for everybody. You had that one woman climbing up on a Statue of Liberty. Well, I found out she was from Congo. All the dirt that's going on in Congo, here she is climbing up on a Statue of Liberty for people south of the border. See, that's the kind of foolishness.
You don't see that as a strong move? I mean, that was the strongest possible move.
Well, if she climbed it for the atrocities that was going on in the Congo, then it was a strong move.
Well, let me.
She climbed it for people from south of the border who don't
it's a strong move at every level. It's a strong move, first of all, because love is the strongest power on earth. And that's our winning hand. And so the notion of
love starts at home, Brother Pugh.
Love don't start at home. Love is the other. Let me.
Love don't start at home? Maybe you're talking about a different kind of love.
Yourself, you can't love nobody else.
No. Well, let me.
If you don't care about you and yourself, you cannot possibly care about that. It almost sounds like that thing Malcolm X says. Let me ask you. It almost sounds like that thing that Malcolm X says. Master, we sick.
Yes, right.
You know what I mean?
Let me elaborate that in another way. When a human being does any kind of strategic planning, so really love is involved, but I think that when you use the word love, that's what I'm saying, that involves somebody else, but you'll see what I'm talking about here. When you personally have a goal, you know, you set out, you know, to achieve something, and I'm going to call the thing that you set out to achieve, whatever that might be, I'm going to call that your beauty. And the reason is beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and therefore what you think is beautiful may be different than what somebody else thinks. But that's what your beauty is. That's what you want to achieve. Well, now the second thing is that you need a plan, a way to achieve that beauty, and that's what's called your truth. Now, it may not be my truth because I'm not interested in that beauty, but what makes that true is that if you execute, you know, according to the plan, it will take you from where you are to your beauty. That's what makes it true. Now, it would be false if you executed the plan faithfully and it didn't take you to your beauty. Now, the third thing that you have to have in a strategic plan is you got to have power. That is to say, you have to have the ability to execute your plan. And so those are the three elements. You have a beauty, you have a truth, and you have a power. But the problem is you live in a world with other people, and therefore you have to make adjustments to your beauty, adjustments to your truth, adjustments to your power, and that's what love is. Love is the accommodation of the other. Now, your point about loving yourself, you see the loving in yourself because of the fact that you're going for your beauty. That's the manifestation of your own self-love, that the things that you regard as beautiful are precisely the things that you believe will sustain you. So it's a given that you love yourself. The issue, though, is that there's this confusion on the part of really immature people believe that somehow or another it's to their advantage not to love other people, when the reality is exactly the opposite. And let me just give you one concrete example to show you what I mean about.
Let me say something to you, brother. Mentioned about it's a given that you love yourself.
Yeah.
Because we've been talking from the beginning of this program about examples of just the opposite of what you're saying. A lot of our people don't love themselves because they've been conditioned to hate themselves. You see it in our some of our behavior. You see it in our thoughts. You see it in how sometimes we act, where other people's initiatives and objectives are before your own. I mean, Ralph just gave an example. This woman risking her life, scaling. I don't know how she got up there. Even white folks can't imagine how she scaled that 20-foot. If you look at the diagram of where she was at, I don't know how she got up there. And when they went to get her down, they had lifelines and everything attached. But, you know, you're risking your life for something that means absolutely nothing to her in relation to what she was dealing with. That's an example. Listen, our people don't. Hold it. Because we're going to move on. But all I'm saying is, it's so many examples out here where our people don't love themselves because of the conditions that we've suffered in this country for over 250 years. It's too many examples where we don't love ourselves. Well, Half of our people don't even know who we are.
I said that loving yourself is a given. What I mean is that.
Well, it's not a given.
Nobody looks at people who don't love themselves as natural. If anybody will look at that and say, man, that's pathological. There's a problem with that.
Yeah, well, right? It is a problem. That's why we deal every week about the problems and at least how we can try to alleviate these problems. And before I move on, I'm kind of glad that last week when you made the statement about white folks trying to get back to the way they were, and I stated to you that if you use history as a guideline, that white folks have not been any different. And you went back and pulled up how this government is based similarly on philosophies of Cicero. I'm kind of glad that you see that white folks have never been any different than what they are now historically.
No, Brother Elliot.
Well,
we'll
continue that next week or some other time.
No, I can make this very, very tight.
Well, do it in 1 minute.
In less than 1 minute. What I'm saying to you is that white people were conquered by other white people. But the problem is their history has been whitewashed. That what has been done to them, they're not aware of.
Yeah, well, I don't agree with that, but that's another story. I don't agree with that. Historically, that's not true at all. In fact, some of the white folks that were conquered by others, they got together in the late 1800s, and the continent that was the richest on the face of this earth, they got together and split it up and made sure some of their white brethren who didn't have much had some. That's why you got that EU now. They always looking out for their white brethren. Sure, they fight and bicker. Wait a minute. Sure, they fight and bicker like any other family, so to speak. But they try to take care of one another. They try to foster and push white values and white supremacy, which benefits all of the white world. I'm going to move forward. No. You don't have to do that. Just save it for next week because there's other callers.
I will do it in 15.
No. Seconds. We'll talk next week.
This is critical.
No. Thank you for your call. I understand it, but we'll talk about it again. Thanks for your call, man. We're gonna take a brief break, and when we come back, we're gonna continue the discussion. We got a bunch of callers here on the line, and time for awakening. We're in open forum. I want to thank again, Brother Ralph, for pinch hitting for. Brother Richard, whose mother is in a grave condition. Our thoughts and prayers go out to my colleague, Brother Richard, and part of the Time for Awakening family. But we'll be right back. Join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. Then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
You preachers and leaders, you administrators, you teachers, you leaders, you are the worst. No cowardly, punctified leader will lead this new generation of young black men and women. Your day of leading them is finished. You can't feel it? When you talk to young people, you can't feel that you're missing them? Parents, you can't feel when you're talking to your children that this is a new generation and they don't want to hear your compromising talk? Did you hear them in Ferguson tell Jesse, get the hell out of here? Yeah. You ain't no leader. I was hurting for my brother because Jesse worked hard for our people. But time has moved on. And what was good yesterday ain't no good at all today. So either... either you become a new vessel so that new wine can be poured into the old wineskin, or your day of leading our people is over and it will never come back to you again. Damn it, we're still in the land of our bondage. We're still in the land of captivity. We're still a slave to the Democratic Party. Still a slave to the Republican Party. You can't even see a Freedom Party. You don't see it. You're a slave. I'm a slave. And unless we admit that we are slaves, then we can never get free. Never get free.
Democratic administration in Washington, D.C. The whites were evenly divided. It was the fact that you threw 80% of your votes behind the Democrats that put the Democrats in the White House. When you see this, you can see that the Negro vote is the key factor. And despite the fact that you are in a position to be the determining factor, what do you get out of it? The Democrats have been in Washington, D.C. only because of the Negro vote. They've been down there 4 years. And all other legislation they wanted to bring up, they brought it up and gotten it out of the way, and now they bring up you. And now they bring up you. You put them first, and they put you last. Because you're a chump. A political chump.
So you could see that the government of America has been planning our demise. Any members of Congress here, any members of the civil rights movement that are here, you love this nation. You've suffered every indignity to make America better, that she might be great. And every time you forced her to make a law that was in our favor, they came right behind that law with skill and chicanery to make the law of non-effect.
When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education and lock them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating her citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in open forum this Sunday evening here in the city of Philadelphia. And you can join the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Al?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Interesting conversation that we had with our brother from Louisiana. You know, that collage that I play of the different speeches, I think it's one portion on there where Farrakhan talks about the apologizing talk and our children hearing that. And then he gave the example of them telling Jesse to get the hell out of here. See, we can't, it's the talk about building coalitions, and we need to build coalitions among ourselves. And, you know, it's black folks here. It's black folks in the islands. It's black folks in the South American continent. It's even black folks on the Central American continent. That I'm not even talking about the mother continent. That's who we need to be building coalitions with. You know, this other stuff of other nationalities that don't care nothing about black people unless they can use them for convenience. That type of talk and that type of day should have long been gone.
That thinking has to go. Yeah, and I thought, I mean, the Congo, what was it, King Leopold?
Yeah.
How many people he didn't kill in that place and the way they're raping that Congo of all that. It's a precious metal that they need to make cell phones,
yeah.
I mean, that place is being exploited, but yes, you're going to climb up on the Statue of Liberty to raise the issue of children being taken from their parents at the border. I mean, I just don't understand if you loved yourself, then you would fight for what King, getting that thing out about King Leopold and how he raped and plundered the Congo. I mean, and it's still going on. Belgium is still destroying that place today. So, I mean, I don't understand. You got to love yourself first. You got to love yourself first. If you don't love yourself, then you will climb up on a Statue of Liberty, you know, because Hillary didn't get in office or something. I don't know. It's just foolishness to me, and that's all I can say.
Let's go to grab a couple of these calls. Let's go to 478-478.
Hello. Good evening.
Yes.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Key. I've called before. I wrote down some things so I could be efficient. No offense to that other man. He kind of went on long. The immigration person. You know, she's an adult. She has the right to do what she wants to do. But I guess I would ask her these three questions. How did what you do help the people of Congo? And I think you talked about some of the things there. And what did you do when you heard that the Haitians were being deported after the crisis that happened in there? That country hasn't fully recovered. And I believe it was late last year, early this year, they talked about, okay, well, we want to send them back to a country that's not totally built up. So those are black immigrants. They're not from Congo, but they're black immigrants. What did you do for that? I don't know what she did. I don't know her. So I wouldn't judge. These are the questions I would ask. And then the last question, this might be kind of mean, but I would ask her, did you think that crawling up the building would help you get full citizenship like that guy from in France, that black guy in France who climbed up the building in Mali? That might be kind of mean, but I would ask, because he climbed up the building and he's a French citizen now, boo, boo, boo. So I would ask that. Those are the three things I would ask her.
Well, you know what? That that brother that climbed up that building to save that child, I wouldn't call that foolishness. I would say he was trying to save a life.
No, so, I didn't say he was foolishness.
Oh, okay.
He was going to get a similar benefit because he was trying to help these other people. I don't think he was foolishness. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay. I understand what you're saying. And I just read down in Haiti, they just had another big riot, number one, over gas prices. And number two, the people are still suffering on that island, all the money that was. And you're right. I would ask her a question like that, but I'm quite sure she doesn't know anything about Haiti. Why would you support a party that, you know, because that thing that when the Haitians had that earthquake, and they were poverty stricken before that earthquake, but when, you know, when the money was given to the Red Cross and all, I mean, they got like, how much did Ms. Danto say? Like $13 billion in aid?
Oh, yeah.
Those people saw none of that. They saw none of that. So that's why I don't give to the Red Cross or United Way and none of those criminals today. But, you know, maybe she, you know, I'm going to say it's foolishness because she's crawling up a wall. She knows she's going to get arrested. But I'm quite sure she's with a group of people that are, they're paid protesters. They are paid protesters. And
well, they stayed on the ground, Ralph. They stayed on the ground.
The other protesters, they stayed on the ground.
Yeah, she climbed up a wall. If she slipped, and I'm not even really talking about falling into that Hudson River and drowning. If she slipped, I mean, she would have probably died before she even hit water because you hit them rocks or you might hit the building going. I don't know how she got up there. They don't know how she got up there. But she scaled that. She scaled it.
Well, you know what? I'm going to take the sister's advice. If she ever comes on a radio station or something explaining why she did it, I'm going to ask her some questions about are you aware of the atrocities that's going on in the Congo and how your people are being exploited? I'm going to ask her that question, you know?
Well, I think she's some type. They said that she's affiliated with her. I might try to reach out to her. I do know her name. Oh. I might try to reach out and get her on here. And that way some of the listening audience can ask her why, what was her motivation. I'm just curious myself also.
Right.
Kia?
I have some more. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I just wanted to give you. I know Brother Ralph, he was like, you know, reparations is a lost cause. I think everyone else keeps fighting for what they deserve. We should keep fighting. I don't think we should just stop there. We should do other things as well, other ways to build up our communities. But, you know, I don't think you should stop fighting for that.
I agree with you. But, see, the thing about it, I think what when our people have the mindset of reparations, they're talking about getting a cash payment, which we are owed. Under the Civil Rights Act of 1866, our people were supposed to get acre, $100 and a mule. With interest, all of us should be running around right now of setting up our families. The thing I think we need, more, you know, reparations mean repair. Our thinking has to be repaired. Our institutions have to be repaired. We need land. We definitely need land. So, you know, when we talk about reparations, I combat that thing about all of us just getting the cash flow because all we're going to do is turn it right back over to the oppressor anyway. So I believe that we should get land. We should get our institutions, real institutions, that we can have control over and set us up to be repaired because there's been a lot of damage done to us through Jim Crow and all the rest of this nonsense and today with the miseducation. So I do believe they owe us. We need our own land. Everybody else has their own land, and that's their advantage over us. We need our own land so we can start repairing ourselves. I'm not totally against it. But when I hear our people talk about reparation, I believe they're talking about just getting a cash flow. And I believe if we just get a cash flow, it'd be a lot of Jordans being bought. There would be Lexus, Mercedes-Benz, and everything, and money just going right back to the oppressor. I think we really need to be repaired, but it starts with our own land. And I'm sorry for cutting you off, sister, but yeah, I got to rephrase that. I do really believe we are owed that 40 acres and a mule, plus our $100 with interest. I do believe we are owed that.
Thank you. And I agree with that. I think we need more than a mule because mules can't reproduce. They think they were slick with that. the Israeli, that I totally agree with what you said, not just because you read it, but the sentiment. And I'm calling from Macon, but I'm from Brooklyn, New York. And my mother, she used to work for a few years at the Bay Ridge DNC, which is was the welfare center in the Bay Ridge area of Brooklyn. And she did see the rabbi would come in and sign for all the people that would come in, or the Jewish people, not only from Israel, but from Russia, a lot of the Russian people. So, yeah, so she saw some of that you were talking about. And then this 18 and 32 thing, I'm kind of disgusted with that too. Not only because they get to go for free, but these are 18 and 32. These are grown people. If they want to go, get a job.
Well, that's what they tell you.
Yeah, you want to go get a job. So I'm glad I never heard of that, so I'm glad that was brought to my attention.
Yes, look it up. It's the Israel right to return or something like that, birthright, something like that. But you'll see it.
Okay.
Kia, thank you for...
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Last but not least, you did talk... Well, before I get that, our sentiments out to Richard as well, Greece. Thank you for Ralph for coming in. And then the other man, Reggie, I remember him. I hope he's okay. I know you said he's working, so he can't come like he used to. So I want to make sure I give shout-outs to them. Last but not least, you talked about the abortion issue. I know you said, but what does a woman think about that? I think if abortions, I don't think anybody in their right mind is for abortion. Usually abortions, from what I hear, from what I've seen in real life, is a last resort. So a lot of bad things or things that were not convenient to these people had to happen before we got to that point. So I think a lot of times black people, I mean, all people in general, they need to address the before so they get to that point. Maybe in general, there wouldn't be such a demand for them. And sometimes they're not all, just some woman and some man just having reckless sex. Sometimes there are medical reasons and women, might get raped or something. And they don't want the baby. And I can't blame someone for not wanting the baby. And they were not trying to have one and they were raped. I can't get mad at them. And from what I used to hear, it said 30% of abortions were by black people. That means what about the other 70%? So we're not this group of people. They always make it like we're doing the most, and it's not true. And when I was younger, I thought only white girls got abortions myself, because in high school there was this women's group, and they were complaining that no black girls this was in high school went. So I went for a whole year, and that's all they talked about was going to get an abortion. I was like, I didn't know white girls were so nasty. But other than that, that's what I have to say on that.
Thank you for your call, Kia. Let's go to 267. 267?
Yes. Brother Elliot.
Yes, sir.
Brother Ralph, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm fine. How are you doing, Brother King?
Oh, everything's good, sir. You know, my heart and my soul and my mind goes out for Richard, man. Good brother, and I'll be contacting him, and I hope everything works out for him, man. You know, we only get one mother, man. We don't want our mother to go anywhere, man. So, you know, I'll be getting contact with him. Brother Ellie, you got some interesting callers calling, man, and that's good. You know, I have a very lively show, you know, and that's good. I'm going to say this about the civilization of black people start going back to the 50,000-year period. Diop talks about cradles of civilization, and from that, other civilizations have sprouted, and we get the 35,000-year period. And in that time period, we were the ones on the planet, black people, the original people of the planet, who had the government. And even amongst ourselves, in the Egyptian mystery system, we amongst ourselves were not all allowed in it. But as time progresses, and the European is bottled up in the cave. He's coming out of the cave now with nothing. It has no relationship that we know of but he's a native of the land. Nobody can ever say what part of the land he comes from, where he comes from. He doesn't even know that himself. But we let him come amongst us in Egypt, Nile Valley civilization, and he conquered our civilization. And his intent was for us not to be a part of his civilization. He saw what we got. But as time progresses, I'm going to say to you that white people have had democracies and dictatorships. Okay? They have been successful in both of them. If we go back to Mussolini, Mussolini was a dictator. Hitler watched Mussolini. Mussolini marched on Munich, on Rome. And Hitler, during his time with the black shirts, during Hitler's time with the brown shirts, he marched on Munich. So my thing is that when white people have a democracy in America, or they're in Europe with a dictatorship, the whole idea is not letting us in their empire. They're still building their empire in America. It has not stopped, and we're not a part of it. So when you tell me, or whoever says this, Mr. Pugh, that whites are not conscious of what they do, they're very conscious of their history. Matter of fact, they want to take their history and make their history ours. If they had a chance to make Malcolm White and King White and all the people that we know of white to make them look like them, yes. And they're not going to stop conquering. And they are conscious of what they're doing. Some of them are unconscious of what they're doing, but they know to keep us out of the game, keep us out of their social, economic, and political order. So let's keep that in mind. And I'm for reparations, Ralph. I know how you feel. We may not never get it, but we might get it. So I'll keep fighting for it, because what's the use of giving up? We owe that. We worked for this country. We did what we had to do in this country. And they've taken our resources out of our country to build theirs. So if I get anything back on that in scholarships, in land, in psychological whatever it is.
Student loans, taxes.
All that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. All that, man. But let us have in mind that as black people, if you want to stick together and have something, we got to do it sticking together. Listen to me, man. Listen to me. If he tells you every day he don't want you around, then listen to him. Do not go in unwanted places and build your own. This is a word of advice. I'm pretty sure you heard it before. You heard it before.
Brother Tim, thank you for your call, man.
Indeed.
Peace.
Be blessed. Stay strong. Stay focused.
Let's go to 215. 215. 215.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. How you doing, brother? Brother, this is a Pete calling.
How are you, sir?
Good. And your last caller was perfectly correct. It was a lively show tonight. Very, very, very well done. What I wanted to say was, when I was in college, I had an African-American professor. The only African-American professor that I had at an undergraduate. This was a brilliant African-American man. He told me a story about Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull, before the Battle of the Little Bighorn, Sitting Bull said he would stay in his teepee, and he sent an envoy who was learned in the tongue of the white man onto one George Armstrong Custer to talk peace. He knew he had overwhelming odds. He had overwhelming numbers that would quickly wipe out Custer, but he didn't want to destroy him, so he sent his envoy. Custer had the envoy killed, castrated, his tongue cut out, and hung in a tree within sight of Sitting Bull's camp. And his question was, who were the savages and who were the civilized men? And that's the question that you asked earlier. Can cruelty be passed down through generations? Can cruelty be genetic? And I don't think that the caller that you were talking to adequately answered the question. He was so brainwashed that he didn't hear what you were saying. So I want to ask that question again. Can cruelty be passed down through generations? People going to hangings and lynchings and selling off body parts of people, and then those same behaviors are passed down to the current generation. They can do the same type of things generations later and not have any sense of remorse. Like you talked about a conscience or guilt. But is it possible this is a genetic defect? That's my question to you.
Listen, I'm no. Go ahead.
Can I ask?
Go ahead.
Look, poverty is cruelty. So anytime you can look at children, women and children starving, and say they need to get a job and ride past them when the money is available, that's war. I think that's what Brother Obi's father wrote in his book. Poverty is warfare. So when you see our people living in poverty, not walking around with a quarter in their pocket, that's cruelty. So, yes, I believe that that same cruelty can be passed down through the genes and it's still here. Or a policeman can ride up on a 12-year-old waving a water pistol and shoot him dead and the jury find him not guilty. That's cruelty. You know what I mean? So, you know, it just comes in different layers. Yeah.
Okay, you know. Like Walter Scott, how can you shoot a running man in the back, all right, multiple times, then go home that night and have dinner with your wife like you did absolutely nothing? What is that? I'm sorry to cut you off.
Barbaric.
So that's my question. And if you go back in history, it was Nat Turner and Denmark Vesey and Gabriel Prosser all led slave revolts. And all were summarily captured and hung, all because the people that they were trying to free were the ones that reported what they were doing. So, like you said, Brother Elliot, a lot of our people are brainwashed. They believe that this is to their benefit. So they won't work with you to free themselves. Does that make any sense to you?
Certainly it does. Certainly it does. Now, listen, it's a question I want to ask you while you're on, but I want to go back because I wasn't aware of that particular history that you talked about. Okay. You know, you're always aware of that incident that happened, but you're not aware of the details of that incident. And I'm talking about that little bighorn. You said that the chief at that time, Sitting Bull, sent an envoy. He knew that they could wipe Custer Regiment out.
He knew it.
But they sent an envoy to talk peace.
Yes.
No, go ahead. And his answer, Custer's answer, was to castrate them, cut their heads off, and send them back to
cut his tongue out and hung him in a tree at the city's Sitting Bull's camp. And so they see it as a massacre, but it wasn't a massacre. Sitting Bull knew that he could wipe this man out. He knew that his compadres were there. But Custer thought he had an easy victory. So he said, no, we don't want anything to do with you. And so that's why the battle of the little, they call it the battle of the little bighorn. That's why that battle was lost, because of arrogance. He thought he had superior firepower and superior number. And he was destroyed. His own arrogance destroyed him.
You know, I want to ask you a question because the young lady that called up gave her opinions on abortion. And you know that Trump is supposed to be picking his choice for Supreme Court. And you've heard some of the Republicans and Democrats, both men and women, talk about that they want this person to be favorable and not overturn this Roe versus Wade. Now, if you look at the history of Planned Parenthood with Margaret Sanger and others, the initial mission of Planned Parenthood was population control of black folks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But just as the universe always makes sure that things balance out, the thing that they targeted black folks to, white folks are hooked up. Talk about the numbers of some of those things dealing with abortion, just while listening.
Well, 37% of all the abortions done in this country are African-American women. But 39% of the Caucasian population are, they have 39, they have a higher number of abortions in the Caucasian community. And that's really what this fervor is about. If the Caucasians had 10% or 5%, would you think these guys, if you look at it, who is the one marching outside of abortion clinics? Who is the one killing abortion doctors? Who is the one blowing abortion? These are middle-aged white males doing this. And do you think they're doing this to keep black women from killing their children? No, they're doing this to stop white women from killing their children. That's what this entire issue is about. If you look at the statistics, okay, if you on the black market, the number one selling baby is a white male child. The number one use of in vitro fertilization are Caucasians. The number one use of fertility drugs are Caucasians. So the issue is to stop these Caucasian women from aborting their children. That's what this whole issue is about. Amazing, isn't it?
But if you notice, they never, just like Europeans and their MO, they never come out and say why this whole, you know, what's this whole fervor about in reference to it. You got one.
No,
of these,
not at all.
You got one of these representatives. So racist representative, I think out of Idaho or Iowa, that always talks about it, and he's the only one that come out honestly and basically give his opinion.
Every once in a while, the truth comes to the surface. Steve King.
Yeah, he always voices, and he speaks for basically all his colleagues in the Senate and Congress. But they, when he talks like
quote,
that, they
I
act
quote
like
what
they.
He said. You,
go ahead.
You can't rebuild your civilization with somebody else's baby. What is he saying?
Yeah.
Oh. What is he saying? Patrick Buchanan said that a death of a superpower in his book, he says that the white population is a aging, shrinking, dying population worldwide. The overwhelming majority of Caucasians in the United States are over 40 years old. So put all the pieces together. Immigration, the killing of black men, and abortion are three major issues in the news. What is the underlying reason? What is at the root of all of this? And if you look at it, you'll see it.
Thank you for your contribution, sir.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Oh, man. Let's go to another caller here. Let's go to 215. 215 again. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm doing. Hey, Brother Ralph. How you doing, my brother?
Hey, Brother Josh.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, I want to wish my heartfelt, you know, prayers and thoughts to Brother Richard and his family for what he's going through, man. My heart goes out to that brother, man. I just, my thoughts and prayers is with him, as I'm sure it is with all the Time and the Waking family. You know, Brother Ralph and Brother Ella, I don't even know where to begin. First, let me kind of like go back a little bit on that on a brother that called in about Louisiana when he was talking about the sister climbing the Statue of Liberty. Only thing I say about that, the brother's right and the sister's powerful, but it's powerful if she, like you said, Ralph, if she's conscious of what she's doing. Because before I say that, because it, like you said, she should have definitely at the foremost. She should have been protesting what's going to Congo with the continued rape of the Congo by the descendants of that murdering bastard, King Leopold, who by the way, make Adolf Hitler look like a Boy Scout, by the way. And, you know, see, but I will say this, though. When you see what's going on with the snatching of the families from these children south of the border, the Mexicans, if you will, one thing I don't take it lightly, because I know how this white man thinks and stuff of Brother Ralph and Brother Elliot. See, the devil things like he do test runs. See all this here, hoopla that when, you know, calling these Mexicans criminals and all this here kind of stuff. We know who their real animosity is against. So that's why I definitely pay close attention to what these devils do, because I know that ultimately, when you know the crowd that Trump got around him, all these white racist bigots, and I mean, these are some of the low life people you can even, you know, imagine. I know that bitterness and hatred, we know they don't have no love for Mexicans or Latinos, period, or Asians, or no people of color, Native Americans, but we know that true venom is, of course, for black people, for people that look like you and me and stuff. So I know them devils, but ultimately they want to be able to push this anti-immigration and anti-stuff on black people. See, they use the Mexicans as a so-called test trial, but their real venom, if this stuff can succeed, is for them to get black people out of this country and to bar any black people coming in, which they are doing to a large degree now, but they want to make it where be in concrete, law and order, where be I's dotted, T's crossed, part of that Supreme Court. And so they, and again, pay attention to this incoming Supreme Court, them biggest that Trump will put on that Supreme Court. So I pay attention to it for that reason alone, because I know when these devils go after other people, it's only pretty much a mock run. Their true targets of keeping out of this country or running out of this country is black people. And I know Brother X always say, run to Africa, you know, we should go to Africa. And I'm cool with that. And we have said this before, and I hope Brother X start calling back again, because if people, you know, feel that way, Brother Elliot and Brother Ralph, and they want to go, and they got the means for it, but I'm realistic enough to know that all of us not going back to Africa for whatever reason. You know what I mean? Some of us feel as though because our people died in this country, and they sacrificed, this country's built on our people's backs, and some people going to stay here and fight. They're not going no damn way, and I cannot respect both sides. I don't knock those that want to go. They think that's the best way to go, and because we need that continent over there built up, and we need to go over there and make sure that continent is built up. And for those of us that want to stay over here and do what they have to do over here, I'm fine with that as well. So I'm cool with either point of view, you know. But again, I guess I don't put nothing past these devils. I know how they think when they come to our people. So I think that we should definitely care, only in the sense that we know how the white man always got to always throw out a so-called red flag, but we know what his ultimate target is, you know. But moving on, Brother Ralph and Ellie, y'all was talking about the Hasidic Jews up in New York. I got an article about that particular case of Brother Ellie and Brother Ralph. Now, what I heard is that the ones that they did caught, they, like you said, Ralph, none of them went to jail. I heard they, from what the article I got out of the paper I read out of the New York paper, they gave some kind of settlement where they're supposed to pay the money back or whatever. No jail time, no calling them welfare chiefs. So all the kind of derogatory names and condemnation, character assassin they would have put on, it had they been black people did this. And this is not no small thing, like you said, Ralph, nothing to take lightly. These people have been ripping off the city, and they're still doing it to a large degree up there in New York. These Jews get all kinds of reparations, welfare, and make it so tragic. A lot of them Jews that got these reparations, Elliot and Ralph, these were people that had money. You talking about middle class to rich people that didn't even need it. They was taking money that should have been going for other people that really wasn't down and out that could use that. But again, I didn't hear the AIPAC, I didn't hear the Jewish Defense League, I didn't hear Ben A. Breath say a word. You know what I mean? But had these been black people, you couldn't keep these white bigots off the radio and talk shows blasting them. The white media, the mainstream white media. Matter of fact, you'd have had these Uncle Tom Negroes who love to jump up and trash it, Uncle Ben Carson's of the world. You can keep these Negroes off the radio and TV, had to have been a group of black people did this. You know, and I know that's Ralph and Elliot, you know, because these were some white Hasidic Jews. It was pretty much brushed underneath the rug, you know. And by the way, when you look at your tax dollars, you know which country gets the most, the largest form of aid. I'm talking about domestic, I'm talking about aid as far as, you know, money wise, as well as military aid. I think we all know what asset is. That's Israel. There's no argument about it. They get the largest aid from the United States than any country in the world.
Yeah, we read over some of the ungodly sums earlier. Go ahead, Ralph.
You know what I mean?
What kind of export comes out of Israel?
No, good question, Ralph.
What do they grow except violence?
That's a good point. I agree with you.
What do they grow?
They don't contribute nothing to the American economy. That's right. But see, again, Ralph, you're dealing with a lot of people. I've said this many times. Brother Marcus agreed with me back here a few months ago. See, a lot of the people, I found among some Caucasians, a lot of them are biblically ignorant, too. See, a lot of these Caucasians, as well as a lot of our people, and these black preachers that go to these white seminary schools, they bow down to these Europeans, these God variety Europeans. They call themselves Jews. They say they are the chosen people of God. They bow down to these people with this false perception that these are some chosen people of God. Like I said, I've had brothers who go to church every Sunday They told me, they said, Brother Joe, I agree with you. What they doing to the Palestinians is cruel, and it breaks my heart. But we can't condemn them people, Brother Joe, because whether we like it or not, they are God's chosen people. I said, man, you sound like a damn fool. I mean, I hate to come at the brothers like that, but I had to, because I had to bring them back to reality and stuff. Hey, I said, why you say that? Well, brother, you know, you understand, my pastor says that they got, I said, your pastor, that's your pastor's ignorant too. I said, he went to white seminary schools, he brainwashed too. So you see that kind of mindset coming out of these black churches. Is there any wonder why these people got a stranglehold on people's minds in this country? So you got people in this country, black and white and other races. They know these European Jews is wrong. They know they're a bunch of land grabbers and murderers, rapists, everything else that they're doing, of atrocities. But they're scared to condemn them because they think they'd be condemning God's chosen people. Man, that's a hell of a brainwashing. When you stop and look at it, brother, now you got some Negroes and some white people that support it because they're that evil, mean-spirited people, but they know better. But they go along to get along because they prop up these Jews because they think they're getting financial benefit from it. But a long segment of it, they do it just out of ignorance. They don't know no better. So you're done with that. Them two mindsets right there, you know. But again, this stuff is getting back worse and worse. And see, when you got the sad part about it, when you got people that's blinded and stuff in the black community from the Democrat and Republican Party that's blinded. You see with AIPAC, when they come here for their little annual convention, you see members of the black caucus, you see white Democrats as well as white Republicans and black Democrats sit there and cheer and not y'all when he come over. He talk all that BS when he come over here every year and speak before AIPAC. They be right there cheering and clapping. So, I mean, you see what you're dealing with and stuff, man, you know. But and I close with this, brother Ralph and Elliot. When you talked about the mindset of these people, like you said, Ralph, when you talk about a people that can drive up there in a car and see a 12-year-old child playing with a toy gun, and you don't even get a child a chance to know what the situation is, you just come out your car firing and gun this child down, and an all-white jury finds them not guilty, you know. And these white politicians and stuff, they right in line with them, because right over there in the Pittsburgh area, I don't know if you saw it, finale, where this white lady, she's a mayor in a little town near Pittsburgh, she said that the protests in Pittsburgh that were protesting the tragic death, murder of Antoine, said it should be sprayed with water cannons and stuff like that, you know, circa 1950s, 60s, and down in Alabama and stuff like that. Of course, she came with this little bogus apology, you know, like you and Ralph were saying, Ellie. White folk, they say these hateful, vile and things, and they call these phony, symbolic apologies. And I say all the time, even on terrestrial radio here in Philadelphia, I don't want to hear it. When these white folks say, I don't want to hear that, so I keep your apologies and stick it where the sun don't shine, because we all know it's not sincere, it's nothing but bogus. You said just what you wanted to say, and you feel what you felt. If you didn't feel that way, you wouldn't, damn it, you wouldn't have never said it. But the point then is that what Antoine Rose in Pittsburgh, and then I'm hearing in Atlanta, Georgia, right outside of Atlanta, a white cop chased this brother down and stuff and gunned him down. This brother was a manager of a local McDonald's or Burger King, had three children, gunned him down and stuff. Now, this cop, just like in Pittsburgh, he was charged with murder. Shocking as it sounds, the community pressure forced him to be charged with murder. But again, there's no reason to celebrate no more than it is in Pittsburgh, because, you know, just because the devil charged don't mean you're going to get convicted, because you know how them devils work. All you got to do, Elliot and Ralph, is get that cracker in front of an all-white jury, and you know how that gonna go. So being charged is definitely a good first step. But unless they get a jury, and don't just get some blacks in the jury, because we've seen even the Bill Cosby trial, getting blacks in the jury don't mean that they're a bunch of handkerchief Negroes. You gotta get some, hopefully get some conscious brothers on them juries so they can convict that cracker and put him in jail right where he belongs at. So anything short of that is no cause for celebration, because we know it's a long road ahead. Him being charged is the first step, because most of the time they're not even charged. But the fact that he is charged, that's a good first step, but it's a long ways to go before we can even have any kind of celebration, you know what I mean? So you know how that go, you know.
Joe, thank you as always for your contribution, man.
Thanks, Brother Elliot. Thank you, Brother Ralph. And once again, Brother Richard, you know I love you, Brother, you and your family. My thoughts and prayers to you, but I'm going to reach out to Brother Richard soon, like Brother Timothy and the other brothers. So I'm going to reach out to Brother Richard sometime this week. Thanks, Elliot. Thanks, Brother Ralph.
Peace. Let's go to Washington, D.C. Let's go to D.C. Caller, you're on. No response. Let's put them back on hold. Take a brief break. No, let's not take a break. Let's take one more call before we take a break. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Ralph. It's Brother Marcus calling.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, brother. All right. You know the statistics. The statistics that the brother previously gave out. It show you know, that the white man is a dying tiger. But you say the dying tiger is the most dangerous animal in the jungle because he know he's dying, but he want to take as much people with him on his journey to death. You know, 400 years is long enough to know. You know what I'm saying? We have been in this country almost 400 or 500 years. If there was any human relationship to be worked out with white folks, we could have done it in 400 or 500 years. These people have no intention of working out any type of relationship with us, or unless we are the bottom. So let's be for real.
That's what I was trying to get the caller from Louisiana to understand. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. And you see now that Trump, they're getting ready to roll back the clock. You see, they're changing all the laws on the Supreme Court and the lower courts. They're going to start the court with their people. And that's going to put black people back another 100 years. So we have to ask the question now, do we stay here and fight with them another 100 years trying to get along with white folks? Or do we turn to our homeland, 12 million square miles of land right here in the continent, waiting for us to come and develop? You know, that Friday when that brother came on, it was such a refreshing program when the brother said, you know, he saw what's going on. He went to Africa and see the opportunities in Africa. And I'm going to contact you later this week, send you an email, because I have some people from Sierra Leone who listen to your program and who want to extend opportunities also in Sierra Leone. They like to get some, you know. So if that is okay with you, I'm going to send you an email. You can link them up and see, get them on your program, because they want to reach out to you and say, look, we want to get, you know, because they say, everybody heading to Ghana, we want some of you to come here to Sierra Leone too. So Africa is the prize. That is the prize, Mr. Pugh. It's not trying to stay here and get along with white folks. I think you're on the wrong program. You're supposed to be over there on the other side.
No, don't say that. Don't say that, Brother Marcus.
No, because you know why? Mr. Pugh always come on the radio, and he always spewing that. Ever since I listened to Mr. Pugh, that's what he's spewing. Always spewing, trying to get along with white folks. Go over that side, Mr. Pugh, and go deal with them people. You know what I'm saying? This is not the program for you. Anyway, thank you, good brothers.
Brother Marcus, thank you. And listen, drop me a line. Give me that information. I think you might have my number.
I think I got your number. I'll get everything to you.
Yeah, I'd love to have them on.
Thank you, good brother. Thank you.
Get me that information.
All right.
We're going to take a brief break. Brother Ralph, how you situated? You all right?
I'm fine for a little bit, yep.
Good. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We still got some callers on hold, and before the end of the program, you might still be able to get in at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in open forum. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
New age is upon us, and yet the past refuses to rest in its shallow grave. For those who hide behind the false image of the Son of Man shall stand before God, God, God.
Voice of racism preaching the gospel is devilish. A fake church called the prophet Muhammad a terrorist. Forgetting God is not religion, but a spiritual bond. And Jesus is the most quoted prophet in the Quran. They bombed innocent people trying to murder Saddam. When you gave them those chemical weapons to go to war with Iran. This is the information that they hold back from Peter Jennings. Cause Condoleezza Rice is just a new age Sally Hemings. I break it down with critical language and spiritual anguish. The Judas I hang with. The guilt of betraying Christ, who murdered him, stole his religion, and painted him white. Translated in psychologically tainted philosophy, conservative political right-wing ideology. Glued together sloppily, the blasphemy of a nation. Got my back to the wall, cause I'm facing assassination. Guantanamo Bay, federal incarceration. How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave, indigenous Holocaust, and the home of the slaves. Corporate America, dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still want to take me to prison. Just cause I won't trade humanity for patriotism. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking, causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view of the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government wants us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Read about the history of the place that we live in, and stop letting corporate news tell lies to your children. Flow like the blood of Abraham through the Jews and the Arabs, broken apart like a woman wife's heart abused in the marriage to bring up holy war. Bottled up like a miscarriage. Embedded correspondence don't tell the source of the tension. And they refuse to even mention European intervention. Or the massacres in Jenin. The innocent screams. U.S. manufactured missiles and M16s. Weapon contracts and corrupted American dreams. Media censorship blocking out the video screens. A continent of oil kingdoms bought for a bargain. Democracy is just a word when the people are starving. The average citizen made to be blind to the reason. A desert full of genocide where the bodies are freezing. And the world doesn't believe that you're fighting for freedom. Cause you fucked the Middle East and gave birth to a demon. It's open season with the CIA bugging my crib. Trapped in a ghetto region like a Palestinian kid. Where nobody gives a fuck whether you die or you live. I'm trying to give the truth and I know the price is my life. But when I'm gone they'll sing a song about immortal technique. Who beheaded the president and the princes and sheiks. You don't give a fuck about us. I can see through your facade like a fallen angel standing in the presence of God. Bitch niggas scared of the truth when it looks at you hard. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view in the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality. Fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill yo while you hanging your flag out your project window. Yeah.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in open form the rest of the way. Well, we're in open form, period. You can give us a call at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Ralph, we'll go right back to the phones here. Let me get myself situated. Let's go to 404.
Hey, Brother Elliot and Richard. I mean, Brother Elliot and Ralph. Y'all hear me?
How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm still learning. Hey, Ralph, man, I love you, man. I heard you way back in the way when you was talking to GW. You know, GW done made, he done passed over. You know that, right?
Yes, producer called me the day it happened, man. I was sorry to hear that.
Yeah, man, so, GW was
a good brother. He was a good brother.
That's all. But I want to ask you and Brother Elliot a question, man. Okay, because Brother Elliot, remember you had Brother, that preacher, Brother Getty on there from that prison in Florida, right?
Yes.
He didn't tell the whole story what's going on, what happened in Florida,
well,
man.
Well, that wasn't a prison, but go ahead.
Right, right. You and Ralph, y'all familiar with the term called gator bait? Okay, I don't know, Ralph, you familiar with that term gator bait?
Yep, I heard of it before. I've heard it, and knowing what I know about certain people, it sounds to be true. But go ahead and educate me, Brother West.
Yeah, what they did in Florida, man, back in when we was showing up in slavery in prison time, they used to take our little babies, black babies, tie a rope to them, throw them in the water to catch alligators, man. Okay. That's what they used to do to our little black children, man. It's documented. And for that brother dog on a pew to sit there and talk that junk, man, that's what flashed in my mind, man, when he was talking all that about them devils, man. I grew up in South Florida. I was born in Georgia right here where King George sent these devils out of prison over here to Georgia. That's how Georgia got started. But, man, when that brother was talking that bovine excrement, man, about them people, that's all I can see, our babies getting thrown in the water with a rope on them, catching gators, man. Okay? So that really got to me, man. That brother bump his gum like that.
Well, what did you say? You remember you mentioned about his name was Gaddy.
Yeah.
That came on. What were you saying in reference to him?
No, I was just saying he didn't tell y'all about the gator bait in Florida, man. You know
well,
man?
If you remember, he talked about, because he said that they would, at that Dozier School for Boys, where they had them there doing all types of work. They was excavating the swamp. He said it was alligators, poisonous snakes, and everything all in there. And he said a lot of the children was being killed. He did mention that.
Yeah, I know. He mentioned, man, but I was just trying to add my point, too. But
okay.
See, in South Florida, I remember, man, they used to be talking about that prison in Marietta, man. I didn't know they were talking about that. They're talking about I think it was owned by the Florida Sheriffs, man. They used to call it Florida Sheriffs Boys School.
Yeah, well, it was, yeah, the Dozier School for Boys, and it was supposed to have been a school, but it wasn't no school. It was a prison camp for the young black children. And he basically said he was rounding them. He got there, and for the listening audience that wasn't aware of it, it's on podcast. He said he got there, I think he was 15, no, he was 12 when he went. They came to his house and told his mother that he had played hooky from school. He had missed school. And he was taken there from, I think it was age 12 to about 17 when they let him go. I mean, that was he was basically in slavery and peonage. He wasn't even, that story was incredible. You heard that story. You heard what he said on there.
Yeah,
well, for the listening audience that didn't hear that story, go to timeforawakening.com and pull that up. Or you can Google it. You'll find it in Google. And listen to the atrocities that was committed on young blacks at that supposedly Dozier School for Boys. And it wasn't until one of our former guests, who is a genealogist, Miss Antoinette Harrell, discovered what had went on down there and rounded up all those people that had been in that camp, for lack of a better term, in during those years. Because she said some whites had uncovered that their children was abused and killed. But nobody even discussed the blacks that was down there. But it was a separate, if you remember on that podcast, he said it was a separate area in that camp for young black boys. And they was doing everything, clearing swamps, planting, picking cotton. I mean, everything. And then getting beat on top of it.
And feed them to the hogs.
Yeah,
right?
That's what he said. That's what he said. He said the ones that died.
Now, I know our people love the Bible. And I heard somebody say something about 400 years up. By their words, they say 1619, right? So next year, 400 years is going to be 2019. So I tie that into this reparation thing, man. Because, look, I do numbers. Okay, but I think I told you this before. Every year that we was enslaved, these devils made $30 million a year. Okay? Now, if you go by 400 years, that equal up to $12 trillion. If you go by 500 years from 1555 or 1523, that is $15 trillion. So next year, our 400 years is going to be up, man. So what I'm seeing is we're going to get our reparations, man. But the way it's going to be, we're going to have to get that in gold bullion deposited in a black bank, okay? It ain't going to be just everybody just go and they just get money and spend money to buy foolishness, like Ralph said. It's going to be under trust. And we're going to have, like millionaires will be overseeing it because, you know, they ain't going to steal. They already rich. Then we're going to have three people from each state, an elder, a baby boomer, a millennium, and a Generation X in each state to really hash this out, Dr. Claude Anderson. But that's just the way that I see. But we're going to get our reparations. One that want to stay, they can stay. One that want to leave, they can leave. But it's coming, man, because we waking up, and it's coming. We're going to get our – I remember thing how I can prove we're going to get reparations. That's why they was scooping up all the black women, man. Because they know we going to get it. So they use our black women when we get our reparations to get their hand on the money, too. That's why you see every program, you see these devils with a sister. I.e., look at Serena, how they done scooped her up. I see a pair for it. They just didn't want to try to get our money, but it ain't going to happen, man. What y'all think about that?
Well, listen, I hear what you're saying, Brother Wes. That's an interesting perspective about people overseeing things, but listen, whatever it is, we're going to make it happen.
Yes, sir. And see, they're gonna be forced to give it to us because look at the weather. It's getting hotter and hotter this summer. These folks are going to be dropping dead like the Wizard of Oz. when the Most High gets through whooping them for what they got to pay for this, man. They got to pay for this. So we coming out of this next year, gonna be 400 years, my folks. So the penalty gonna be up. All right. So one more thing, Elliot, man, I'm so strong I got kicked off of Facebook, man. But it's all good. I want to. You said something about a black website called Adam BC, something like that.
Yeah, Abumi Tumikasa. If you send me an email, it's a black social media site. And listen, it's a lot of information on there. I love it.
Yes, sir.
I'll send you the information. Just send a request to timeforanawakening.com. I'll send you the link. Okay. Yes,
Brother
Richard, a BB.
Man, I hope you come a fool too, man. But whatever, it's the master plan, man. But we gonna make it, man. I know you, Raph, man. You and my man Mo, man. You need to have Mo call in sometime too, man. I love y'all,
brother. But hey, good hearing from you, man.
Thank you for your call.
Stay strong, stay in the light, man. We gonna get where we got to be, man. I love y'all.
Peace.
Love you too, bro. Peace.
Let's go to 646. 646.
Yeah, what's going on, brother Elliot? Ralph, what's popping?
How are you, sir?
What's going on, brother? Jay.
Yeah, I heard you asking about me earlier in regard to that Jew. You laid it out. Did you get more power and privilege in New York than anything else? But first, let me say this. Let me give my prayers and shout out to Brother Richard, you know, and I hope that all works out well during this time, a trying time. First off, let me say this to you, Elliot. There are some people that need to be aborted. I don't care what nobody's saying. Jesse Lee Peterson, Clarence Thomas, Al Sharpton. I can name a few more. They shouldn't have been aborted. Because they serve no good for humanity, if the truth be told. Now, in regards to this whole situation with the Jews, the Jews have a position in this country based on, I guess, their economic wealth or position that they hold economically, which in a lot of ways I understand, in some ways I don't understand. And it just seems to me that America is the Jew, you know, be. Because the things that they do for the Jew, I don't know if they do it for anybody else. I don't think they do it for Europe. I know they don't do it for no other country. So, I mean, I don't understand. You know, what do they have over America to the point to where as they're able to dictate and do what they do?
You asked me. I don't know. I can't... I mean, it's theirs, reality. They not only have that hold over, quote unquote, United States, you know, although they're in partnership, basically, but they have a hold right. over black representatives. They force them to sign agreements and to pledge that they're going to go along with anything Israel put down.
I'm the only person I've ever heard criticize Israel in the United States was a black man, is Farrakhan. That's the only one. I've never heard no other black man in the United States say anything in regards to Israel. And you better not say anything at all about what they do to the Palestinians. I mean, I was just looking online earlier today where that clown Draymond Green was over there celebrating Israel. That's something I could never morally do.
Wait a minute. He was over where celebrating Israel?
He was over in Israel celebrating them.
For what? What was he doing?
Basketball and everything. Goodwill ambassador or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I totally done lost respect for him. You know, I can't deal with him no more. I don't have no respect for him anymore. Because the bottom line is this. He must not know the history of that relationship. And that's the unfortunate thing.
Well, a lot of them don't. A lot of them don't. And a lot of them have these white agents that suggest to them to do certain things. And I'm quite sure that he probably has a white agent. I'll be shocked if he has somebody black. And they tell him to do certain things. It'll be good for their career, good for their financial benefits, whatever. And they do it.
Yeah. You know, you never see them push any type of black programs or anything of that nature. Now, let me point it out to you, the condition of us as a people. Now, think about this, because this is for my boy Ralph, really. Because I want to hear what Ralph got to say about this. For the last 25 years or more, the Negro peen, yes, I'm saying it straight up, the Negro peen has been going to New Orleans for the Essence Fest. All the Negroes go there, party, shake, dance, rock and roll, and do all the things that Negro peeps do. They have a good old time. My question is this. In the 25 years that the so-called Negro peeps elite have been there, politicians, businessmen, and everything, what the hell have those Negroes produced out of that 25 years? Why hasn't those Negroes come together and build a convention center, a hotel, or anything of that nature where they would be in the position to stop giving their money to the Yoruba? Why? That's what I want to know. 25 years you've been going to New Orleans, spending buku cash, giving it to the daddy, and you ain't even come together, place yourself in the position to do nothing for your people other than dad, shake, rattle, and roll. It's problem.
You know what they've done, Jay? Yeah, you're right. And you know what they did? They have created something. More Negro peons.
That's it.
That's it in a nutshell. They created more.
Now, think about how much money is there, Ralph. Think about the type of revenue that they're generating. Think about this. Why haven't they been able to get the Johnsons, because you know Bob Johnson and his wife is in the hotel business. Mm-hmm. Why haven't they been able to get together, partnership, go someplace like a Virginia, put together some hotels in a nice-sized convention center where black folks could take their organization, their sororities, their fraternities, Essence Fest and all of that, and put it in the black people's hands and network and do the necessary things to grow and develop. That's why we're not winning. That's why we're not going to win. And I'm sorry to say this, and everybody say that I'm being the downer and the Debbie Downcast or whatever they refer to it in, but how can you constantly be in a position where you're not trying to develop economic for African people? Everything that you do is based upon trying to get closer to the daddy. I mean, at what point in time do you say to yourself, enough is enough?
Well, you know, Jay, go ahead.
Let me add this in, Elliot, real quick. That's just like Dr. Dre maybe a year or two ago, donated $70 million to USC instead of and so it's the same thing, man, and that's why when a sister called earlier and said we need reparations, yeah, we do. We need repair. But as far as finances, it's a lot of us that got that now, and he donated to USC. I'm quite sure a historically black college could have, you know. I don't understand these people, man.
Well,
I tell you this much. If you gave black folks reparations, it would be right back in the hands of white people within 6 months.
6 days.
90% of it.
Well, I mean, that goes to, if you remember the first caller we had, Jay, and he was taking for granted that black people love themselves. And I was saying that a segment of our people that don't love themselves. No. I mean, you're giving examples that they don't. It's no other people that's going to be going places and have a running festival where they're in one particular location for a number of years, and it don't come across their mind to build their own facilities there. There's no other people to do that.
I can't think of no one.
Listen, you,
you name another group that would be in the situation that wouldn't do it? And you know what the truth of the matter is, if we're going to be honest? It's not hard. It's not hard. It's the commitment of a people to separate themselves from their oppressor and to deal with each other on an economic level to where as they grow and develop something of value. Every other group do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Why is it that we the only ones that don't do it? And every other group in this country is passing us. Every group is passing us. Here it is. You got this immigration nonsense going on. Back in the day, so-called civil rights was about people coming together for opportunities and all this and that. Okay. Everybody got some sort of opportunity, and what did they do? They show black people they behind. But here it is. We still fighting for people who have no type of loyalty to us, who don't practice no type of economic trade with us, who don't do anything to assist in our plight as African people who's here suffering. And we just constantly go about the business at hand of trying to get along with our enemy. And when you say it, everybody want to talk bad about you. Everybody want to say you being negative and this and that. Name me a damn group of individual ethnic groups in this country that is an ally and an allegiance and African people moving forward. Name me one group. There's not one group.
I know. Yeah, I agree with you.
But every damn group we try to integrate with, how could you constantly be oppressed by the Yoruba and want to integrate with the Basti? You're supposed to be dreaming, thinking, eating, and doing whatever, saying to yourself, I want to kill him.
Hey, Jay, what's your opinion on the sister climbing the Statue of Liberty?
Oh, she's a fool. She's a fool. You know why I take her?
I'm glad I'm not by myself, bro.
You know why she's a fool? Because she's nothing but entertainment for the Yoruba. It was nothing but the Yoruba was around her, and she felt as though she had to do the monkey act to show her allegiance for white folks. Get out of here. You know, get out of here. And I hope they do her lovely, because she deserves to get done lovely. Now, if there was some real sort of coalition going on and it was really about something, then I may give her a slight pass. But no, she's a fool. Everybody knows she's a fool. She knows she's a fool herself.
Yeah, because it showed the other protesters.
The first caller said it was powerful.
What powerful? What powerful? It's just like that Negro who took down the flag in South Carolina and all of that. Listen, these are acts. These are nothing but acts to entertain the rules. These are nothing but acts to make it seem like we have some sort of allegiance to this white man, or that we are putting pressure on the white man to act and behave in a much more kinder fashion to us. But if you notice, every time you turn around, what is white folks doing to us? Attacking us? When they see us someplace, they question, do we have the right to be there? You know, all of these things. Now, let me tell you how sick the Negro is. This is the Negro. They see that these people are losing their jobs, right? And these things are happening to where as they're being called out, this and that, that and this. But the reality is, they're just sacrificial lamb put in place to be able to continue what's going on. What do you think's going to happen to the cat that just lost his job? He's going to get another job. He got on the internet or he got on some place to show contrition and apologize and all this and that. So you give him a little punishment of maybe being out of work for 4 or 5 months, and then somebody else will get a bastard job. And it all goes on. It just goes forward. never in my life thought about going high with somebody going low. I'm always thinking about how can I go lower? I want to go lower. I had no problem with going lower. You know what I mean? It just don't make no sense. It's just like, you know, this brother was on Facebook talking about somebody disrespected his daughter on the job, sexually harassed. Matter of fact, it was Scotty Reed. His daughter was sexually harassed on the job. They fired one of the guys. They fired one of the guys, and the other guy they didn't fire. Now, if that was mine, and he sexually harassed mine, her brother would probably take care of it. And if he didn't take care of it, then I would take care of it. But there's just certain things that we allow to happen, so it just happens constantly and continuously. And here it is, now the white man got to keep a certain face in place, so he'll fire somebody. You know what I mean? But does that stop the behavior? That doesn't stop the behavior. The behavior continues. Because it's just like with the police. Until somebody in this country punish a police officer and his family the right way, they won't stop. That's why I love that movie with Samuel Jackson, A Time to Kill. Because there was a message in that movie. And you got to understand the message in that movie. And there was a time back then where men did that. There were men that they didn't do it all the time, but every now and then they would do it. And that's the only way it was. That's the only way it would stop. I was just looking at the news earlier today, and Eric Garner's mother was on there, him and his whore and crying about looking for the DOJ to go in there and prosecute the cop that killed her son. Now, you think that the Donald Trump Department of Justice is going to go and do something like that? You got to be kidding. But these are the things that we look for.
I'm going to take it a step further. Do you believe that Barack Obama's Department of Justice would have prosecuted him?
Of course not. Because they had ample opportunity.
Oh, yeah, they had ample opportunity to do that. It was a lot of murders of innocent, but Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, a lot of that happened under his watch.
Michael Brown.
Yeah.
Did they ever prosecute anyone that I know of? The only thing I did think that they do was took one or two police, the police department, and I think is what they call dissent degree or something like that, because they were just so outrageous and blatant. But no.
Yeah, but a lot of them violent. A lot of them, they don't adhere to those consent decrees, Brother Jay.
No. Hey, I don't know what I'm saying. You know, it's you know what it is? It's to give people like Tongue Daddy something to use to say that we're doing something.
A victory.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
That's all it is. I mean, once you know the game, you know how they use it. But I mean, the reality in all of it is, and we must also ask ourselves this, at what point in time are we going to say enough is enough? At what point in time are we going to realize that we don't have no allies or friends in this country? At what point in time are we going to see that we're not moving forward towards sovereignty like we need to? Everything it seems that we're doing is to integrate with our oppressor. Everything. For what reason? I don't understand. Because if you notice, the white man, since this clown done got elected, has become more bolden than he ever been that I've noticed in my lifetime. You know what I mean? I've never seen this white boy as blatant with his racism than I have seen over the last 2 or 3 years. I just haven't seen it. What do you think, Ralph and Elliot?
Well, now you know this is a big fad now among white folks to call the police. Now, they know the type of reactions that police have when they run into blacks. I don't care whether it's young black children, women, men. So now it's a fad now for white folks across the country, whether it's in Philadelphia, San Francisco, down south, Midwest. You see all these incidents all over the country where white folks is calling the police on little children, on women, yeah. on families, anybody. And then when the cops are there, you see them, like they pull that woman out the Waffle House, try to pull her clothes off of her. They call the police on little children. It's a fad now. They're calling police on black folks. So when when these police arrive on the scene, and what happens when they went into Walmart and shot the man in the toy aisle, or shoot Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old, they know what's been happening when police get on the scene with these black people. So when they're calling them, they don't care what happens. So, I mean, I'm just saying, I'm just backing up what you're saying. This seems like a fad now among whites to call police on any little thing black folks are doing.
We got to use a different word other than fad. Because, again, you can't just say it's a fad. It's just as blatant as it is. We need a broader description.
Yeah, you're right.
It's fad.
You're right. You're right.
You know what I mean? Because they just feel as though they can criminalize us at any drop of the hat. I mean, the manner in which some of us act is we scared to confront them when they act and do what they do. You know what I mean? It's like if I'm the person that was at the pool with my kids and what you call them, and the person came up to me and told me something about socks and a hat, and I'm seeing other people with hats on that she's watching it to, the first words that's coming out my mouth is, get out my face, bitch. And then if you really piss me off, it depends. You know, it depends how far I take it. But I'm not going to let you just blatantly disrespect me. You know what I mean? When I know that there's racist tint involved in it. And the funny thing is, if you notice, and I think you've been noticing, all of those people that's doing this nonsense is getting fired.
You know that don't mean nothing to get fired.
Right. But I'm saying, in their mind, they don't care, or they're under the auspice that what they're doing, people don't have no problem with them doing it. That's the crazy thing.
Now, let me give you another example, too, before we move forward, Jay. Here in Philadelphia, and this happened last week, and it made social media. It didn't really make the news. It made social media. And you might be familiar with it, Ralph. It was a guy took his family over there to 40th and Walnut. You know those theaters over there, Ralph? You still there, Ralph?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay, over 40th and Walnut. They got those theaters over there at the college campus on University of Penn. Well, I've been over to that theater before. I won't go back again because when I went in there, the young college white kids, man, they're talking, they're on their cell phones. You can't even hear the movie. Well, this guy took his family over there. And he came out and complained, him and his wife, that they couldn't even hear the movies, people on cell phones and all, and he wanted his money back. So they gave him his money back. And they told him that they wanted him to leave because he got his money back. So he said, well, I'll leave, but my children are inside. I want to go back and get them. When he wanted to go back and get them, they called the police. Did you see that? Did you see it on social media?
Yeah, I saw it.
They called the police because the man wanted to go back in there and get his family. Over there at the Philadelphia Zoo, now the children been out there, you know, and you not only see black children out there, you see white folks out there selling T-shirts and everything else.
Yeah, I saw that.
The young black kids out there selling water because it was hot as hell up here in Philadelphia all last week. They out there selling water. The white folks called the police on them. The thing that I like is some of the black security at the zoo, it was almost a confrontation there because they stood up saying, hey, you ain't calling the police. I'm glad that some of the blacks, instead of sitting back watching the police call on their children, at least they stood up and said, no, we ain't going to allow this to happen. But that's what I'm saying. Now you see these white folks calling the police, the first drop of a hat, they anything going on, they calling the police.
Now, didn't the black security sister confront the Yoruba girl for what she did? She confronted her, right?
You talking about the zoo? The zoo?
She became upset and started crying at that, to the white girl that made the call, because
because the white girl said, the black girl asked her, why you do this? They wasn't doing anything. She said, the black girl, she said to the black girl, because I wanted them to go.
Yeah, you know.
She said, because I wanted them to go.
One thing I got to agree with that guy, Tariq Nasheed, about, he said, we got to stop being so emotional around these fools. You know what I mean? And just see it for what it is and confront it. See, our problem is we get all emotional around these demons. And that's when the cops come in, seeing us acting all erratic and everything. They don't have no sympathy on us because we're all emotional and everything. We got to get that under wraps, man. And that's why I was telling you, Ellie, we need that thing about ethics, man, repeated over and over and over again on how to behave around this attack that we're going through. When I see these sisters going all off, why are you doing it? Well, you should know why they're doing it. They're doing it because they're doing it. Stop acting and just call a spade a spade. I say, oh, that's how you rolling. Okay. Well, I'm going to stand right here, and I'm going to tell the police. You know, I mean, go back and I'm going to tell the police that I'm afraid for my life because you're trying to attack me by calling them. And you make yourself a 911 call. This woman just called the police on my child. I fear because everything is taped on a 911 call. I have a fear for my life that the police will come out here and they will attack my children because this woman wants that to happen. We got to start thinking with our heads and just stop being all emotional and crying all over the place. We gotta start fighting fire with fire, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so they make a 911 call, we make one.
Yeah, well, let me leave you with this. I tell mine, if you ever caught in that situation, keep your mouth shut. Don't
yep.
stand still. Do not say anything. When you get to the precinct, say you want to make your call and you want your lawyer. And that's all you do. I don't want you saying nothing. Don't try to fight. Don't try to do anything. If they say put your hands behind your back or whatever, just do it. And we'll take care of it. We'll deal with it. But the thing is, I want to see what happens with this guy that was sitting on the sidewalk that they tased. I want to really see what happens with that cop.
They're not bringing no charges against them. It just came out yesterday. That happened in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I just worked in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
They're not bringing no charges against the cops.
No, they said they're not bringing charges against
them. And I'm going to tell you something about Lancaster. I'm going to tell you something about Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It's something like Williamsport, Elliot. It's like... must be like a lot of recovery houses out there because I'm starting to see a lot of black folks in Lancaster. And the thing about it, they all look like they're just rebounding from some rehab or something like that. And I'm wondering why these folks are going out to places like Lancaster, Williamsport, Wilkes-Barre. They're going to these little communities where they don't really stand a chance. And they are the people, I think they're just coming out of rehab or something like that, because you can see it. And that's what happened in Lancaster. Those are the kind of black folks that live in the middle of Lancaster. People that have, like, mental issues or drug problems or something like that. Because I see them out early in the morning. I had to work at the hospital in Lancaster, and I saw it, man.
You mean to tell me, and let me get this right, the only thing that's gonna happen to that cat that got tased is he's gonna get some money, but that police officer is gonna be able to stay on the street and continue his job and all that.
No. If you Google it, you'll see that there's going to be no disciplinary action against the cop.
On that note, I'll talk to y'all on Friday. And let's all say a prayer for Richard and his family. Peace.
Okay. Thanks, brother. Peace. I guess we got time for one more before we wind things down. Let's go to 414. 414? 414?
Where's the taco team?
Well, you'd say you want some tacos. 414? I think 414 must have stepped away. I heard him talking about some tacos. Did you hear that, Ralph? You still there? Let's go to 202. 202? 202. I guess 202 is not there either. Let's go back to 414. 414, are you there?
Hello, Elliot.
Yes, sir.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
You must be eating something. I heard you talking about tacos.
Yeah. I'm busted.
Yeah, I'm going down south of the border.
Listen, I wanted to talk about the European Jewish piece just for a sec.
Go ahead.
I know you're fine, but because that's one of the things I have dealt with a number of times on my program, because these European Jews who are not Hebrews, they have no connection whatsoever to the ancient Israelites or anything ancient. They are the latest converts to Judaism around about 1,000 years ago. And they dominate and control Judaism. They dominate and control a lot of areas. They consider themselves to be the smartest people on the planet. They're European.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the Russians. The Russians are European. Europeans, Caucasians, dominate on the planet. They're bullies. They're selfish. They're greedy. They don't want to share. All about control. That's why when you look at what Francis Crest Welsing said, it is in all areas of people activity. European Caucasian extremism. Brother Paul from across the pond said you shouldn't use the word superior because they're not superior, and they're not. They're not superior, but they are extremists. They're very extreme in terms of what they have done on this planet, what they have done to human beings, particularly what they have done to us. That's why a cracker can't tell me sugar, honey, iced tea. They can't tell me nothing. I reject whatever the hell they have to say or do. And I think that, unfortunately, we think that we could maybe vote a mindset in, pray, march, boycott, a mindset that Caucasian would be more humane, would have some feelings, get an epiphany, whatever. It's not happening. It's not going to happen. And yet, just like Jay said about Jesse and all the other ones who beg and plead, and Al, beg and plead Caucasians, you know, and think that somehow voting will miraculously put us as a people in a better position. I ain't talking about being on top, talking about in a better living position where we have a good majority of our people. I ain't talking about that 20 to 10% of the Negropeans who are very happy in this system and who support. Just like somebody else mentioned about supporting Israel. You're trained to support Israel. If you're a Christian, you believe that you better support Israel. Israel, based upon what the Bible says. But these are not the people of, well, I don't know who the hell they are. They, and I don't know what the Bible is, but I don't put faith that the Bible in itself is the infallible word of God. So, but of course, you know what I'm saying all the time is that given that fact, the main thing we should be trying to do is come together and get out and go home and manage our people, manage our land, and manage our affairs, be players in the world. Somebody wants something from Africa, you have to fair trade. It's what's supposed to be. We're not going to be pawns anymore. We're going to be players. I hope that's the direction that we begin to go as we seek sovereignty. Because that, to me, is the ultimate. Because the crackers constantly tells you how messed up you have it with him. He has all the graphs, all the statistics, all the percentages, will constantly tell you how messed up you have, how messed up you have it under his system. And you always be. And yet we still vote in his direction, vote for what he wants. Play cake, cop towel. Castigate anybody who is contrary, you know, who speaks, you know, against this system. Boy, something just blew. I hope that's a firework and not gunshot. Anyway. Hello?
Uh-huh. You're still there.
I'm still okay. Okay, I'm sorry. But, you know, and so that's the ultimate. I mean, sometimes we have to ask ourselves, you know, what is our end game? What do we want to achieve? What is the future for us as a people? What does it look like? What does it look like 5, 10, 20 years from now? We know what it looks like. That's why I'm saying, and we've said a couple of times tonight's program, of how important it is looking and examining 2019, 400 years of existence in America under this European and this global system. What is going to be our response to ourselves? I don't give a damn about, you know, what Caucasians think, say, or we definitely do because they're doing it. But you understand what I'm saying, Ellie? I don't care about that. We should care ourselves about that. What's most about Trump or what he says? What's most important is how are we going to break this chain? How are we going to release this vice grip and begin to look at ourselves, look at each other, look at them for who and what they are, come together, begin to respect one another, trust one another, love one another, work with one another. More important than anything globally, working with one another, more important.
That's the key.
It's just not here in America or in the Caribbean. You know, it's global. It's a global African. It's Pan-Africanism. That's the key. We'll continue to whine and cry about our condition. I know we will. Yep. Well, thank you, dear brother. Appreciate it.
Listen,
great program as always.
Before we go, what's on tap this week?
Oh, I got a brother who wrote a book on. I can't remember the title. Brother Marshall, Kenneth Marshall. And I've seen a few pieces that he had online. And then one time he talked about religion. He talked about people who talk about, you know, being blessed and highly favored, you know. So I'm going to have him on the program. I'm going to talk about his book as well as, you know. Cause, I mean, Elliot, I challenge the theology of Christianity because it purports itself to be historical. And if it is historical, where's the evidence?
Well, listen.
Where's the evidence that stands up to scientific objective scrutiny? Where's that at?
Well, listen, you heard the caller West out of Georgia.
Yeah.
You brought it up. See, those are the things when we have these think tanks and discussions, serious discussions around the country in different cities. That's one of the topics that need to come up. If we do a reflection of our experience here. And even if you just use 1619 to 2019, 400 years, what is the difference? What has changed? Is there any change with Europeans' historic dealings with us? And if you talk about those conversations, religion has to be at the forefront. It has to be, because that's one thing that's a common denominator with our experience with Europeans here in this country. It's been Christianity that has been a common controlling denominator.
Yeah.
Now, people don't want to admit it because they're not dealing with the reality of the situation. They're dealing with the panacea of it, how they make it, how it makes them feel when they that spirituality, it has nothing to do with religion. how you feel in reference to the maker of heaven and earth. I'm talking about the religious experience that we've had dealing with Christianity since in this country dealing with Europeans. It has been nothing but controlling and sometimes horrifying for our people. I mean, that's the reality of it. Those conversations always come up. They're going to have to come up even more. We can't be afraid of them, and I'm glad that you talk about them.
I appreciate it. Thank you, and you too, Elliot. And you know, even on the continent, in fact,
top 10 of the
individuals, mostly men, top 10 men in the world in terms of Christianity making buku money. Creflo Dollar and T.D. Jakes is not in the top 10. But three Nigerian ministers are in the top 10 with this BS prosperity gospel, the Joel Osteens and all the Plessises, whatever. Read. That just lets you know how messed up the continent is. You know? Christianity, man, and I think of all the things that work on our minds, it's probably the hardest for us to really break and the hardest for us to really challenge. You know, it is extreme. It is extreme. Even all the proof and, you know, in history in the world that's verified by anybody and everybody objectively, honestly, historically, whatever, these folks will deny it because it doesn't fit with the Christian dictum. It doesn't.
Well, looking forward to the conversation tomorrow morning.
All right, good, brother. Thanks a lot.
Peace.
Peace to you, Elliot.
Talk to you soon.
Peace, family. And also, too, much love and much strength to Richard. Peace, family.
All right. Brother Al? Look like we're winding up another program.
I'm here, man.
Yeah, look like we're winding
up. No more callers?
Yeah, look like we cleared the board. I don't know whether you got... We got one more sitting here. I'll go back to her because I think she might have stepped away from her phone. Let me go back to Washington, D.C. again. Washington, D.C., are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Elliot, you hear me?
I hear you now.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. This is like third time. I guess they say three times a charm.
Okay.
Okay, well, I had a lot to say. It's very little time. I don't think I can really say everything, but I was listening to previous callers and had commentary on it. One that stuck out for me and was important for me to get across this line tonight was the issues of reparations and repair. What I wanted to put out to the audience tonight is that here in Washington, D.C., that's where I'm calling from, we have a brother, his name is John Cheeks. He has a repair and recovery law and bill that is written that we're trying to get on the referendum, on the ballot in 2019 as a referendum, okay? In addition to that, he is going to be running against Eleanor Holmes Norton, who is a longtime House of Representatives rep for the District of Columbia, more than 20, probably 30 years. I think she's been in the House of Representatives since I was born. But this referendum is very, very important because it is going to set precedent, what we're hoping for all of the cities across the United States. I hear people in their sentiments on reparations, what we can't do. I want to tell your listening audience that you're wrong. Don't say that we can't do it. We can, because it's all about strategy. We're putting it in. John Chink is trying to put it in as a referendum. It is a very similar bill, like here in the District of Columbia. It's two laws that we got passed locally. That is the marijuana bill for the legalization of marijuana. That was done by way of referendum. It had nothing to do with a candidate being run or a candidate advocating for it. It was a special question on the ballot. So we got to understand and learn how to put those special questions on the ballot. That is how we got legalization of marijuana in the District of Columbia. And that is also how we approved and voted for gay marriage in the District of Columbia. So why not, if marijuana can be voted in on, and if gay marriage can be voted in on, why can't a Repair and Recovery Act for Black people be placed on the referendum to be voted on? So that is what we're trying to do, and we want to put ourselves around John Cheeks, because I think it is in line with all of your callers. It is in line with I had a study group, the 1 Million Conscious Black Voters. It is in line with us. It is in line with Dr. Claude Anderson. I run his study group. So we want to put all of our power behind that, because if we can set precedent in Washington, we will use that as a blueprint for Philadelphia, for Los Angeles, for Chicago, and everywhere else.
I hear you. And listen, I want to thank you. We're right up against it. I want to thank you for your contribution. And I'm going to try to get you in a little early. We tried earlier, but I think you might have stepped away from your phone.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, this is very important, because we've got to get this here in Washington. We got to get it established on a political, there's like administrative timelines to get on the ballot for 2019, so we're trying to get on the ballot for 2019, and we do have a reparations bill. It is alive. All we got to do, it's repair and recovery. We don't want to hear anything about that we can't do it, because what I want to get across the line is that if we can do it to legalize gay marriage, if we can do it to legalize marijuana, we can do it for the repair and recovery of our people, which is just due. I talked to the brother. We talk about gator babies. We talking about a long history of things that we need repair for, okay? We never got our 40 acres and a mule. We need to have an extended conversation about that. And it seems like our people are ashamed. It's almost like they feel ashamed about asking for their just due. So we have to work on that on these radio stations and let our people know there's nothing that you should be ashamed about. This is, we working for DACA, we working for immigrants. The first thing we need to be is working for ourselves. This is our teaching. So we have to get that message out, and I wish I could get in earlier, especially now. But we are working to get this on the ballot. This is not nothing. Any of these naysayers to say we can't do it, here's the answer. If you can do it for two men and two women to marry and put a referendum for gay marriage, if they can do it for gay marriage, Black folks can do it for their own people. So I don't want to hear nothing about no Black folks who is not going to support us, because they did it for themselves by way of referendum. They're just ignorant. They don't know how to do it. We do. So we're trying to get the referendum for reparations on our ballot. And give my most heartfelt love to Brother Reggie. Reggie, I love you. Oh wow, I just got wind of that like last week. That's why I'm kind of like on the line. But my hearts and prayers is to Reggie and
Elliot.
Thank you. And Ralph, I mean, of course, I love you always. You're sitting in, you're being the soldier that you always are. But please put it out to Reggie that my heartfelt feelings are with him in our prayers and the spirit and everything. And whatever happens at the end of the day, God sees, you know, he knows his mother. He knows him more than me and you and anybody else. And we just give all the love to him and give him comfort if anything happens. And I'm just going to end it with that.
Okay. And you're talking about Richard?
Yes, I am. I'm talking about Reggie and his mama.
Oh, no, that's Richard.
Brother Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you for your call, sister.
Okay.
Peace.
Thank you.
Round time, we come up on the end of another program, man. Good dialogue, and again, thanks for stepping in, pinch hitting for Brother Richard. And my hearts and prayers go out to Richard. I'll be talking to him again probably after the show's over to see how things are going.
Yeah.
And
I'll probably send him a text because I don't really want to interfere what, you know, what he's going through right now. So I think I will send him out a text message.
Yeah, and I know as soon as he can get back into the seat, he'll be back with us. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take care of. Little Tommy, he said he wants to be a farmer.